Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. Coming up in a little while, we have Malcolm Gladwell on the program to talk about his new book, David and Goliath, Underdogs, Misfits, and the Art of Battling Giants. And he'll take your calls. It'll be Ask Malcolm Gladwell on anything from his body of work coming up. But right now, let others obsess about the horse race. We've got issues. It's our election series, 30 issues in 30 days. Issue 8, the counterterrorism mayor. All this week, we've been discussing policing and public safety as part of 30 issues. Today, I'm joined by Richard Aborn, head of the Citizens Crime Commission, to discuss what the next mayor can do to help prevent terrorism in New York City and what we know about Lota's and de Blasio's plans to do just that and how different they are. Richard Aborn, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning. Always good to be with you.
And to set up the critical questions we'll be asking this segment, we turn to none other than Police Commissioner Ray Kelly, because on the day before the mayoral primary, Kelly gave a speech at the Council on Foreign Relations in which he said this about the mayoral contenders.
I believe the public has a right to ask them some important questions. For example, what is their understanding of the terrorist threat to New York City and its immediacy? What is their perspective on the role the NYPD should play in protecting New York from global terrorism?
And Kelly went on to say,
the threat of terrorism is as great, if not greater, today than it was before the World Trade Center was destroyed. I can tell you that none of the candidates has requested a briefing from the department on this topic.
Police Commissioner Ray Kelly. So Richard Aborn, Kelly was reacting to the fact that terrorism just hasn't been that big of an issue in the race thus far, except maybe for the debate about the surveillance program on Muslims in New York that Kelly denies exists. Do you agree that it hasn't been an issue, and does that surprise you?
Well, the entire public safety issue has not been that big an issue yet in the campaign, though I expect that will change as both candidates get more and more active on the campaign trail. I think the commissioner has highlighted a very important point, which is we need to guard against being lulled into a false sense of security. Very often when a society doesn't see a dramatic event taking place, it assumes a dramatic event won't take place. And I think that is a classic problem with terrorism. We are very, very fortunate, and I think it's because of the good work of a lot of people. New York City has not been victimized by another spectacular attack, as the 9/11 attack is referred to. But that doesn't mean it can't happen again. So I think the challenge around terrorism probably falls into two very broad categories. One, there are the policy challenges, which is actually somewhat similar to stop and frisk, which is under what conditions do we want our police engaging in this sort of activity? What sort of threshold knowledge they need to have before they engage in surveillance? That's sort of a policy issue. And then there are the specific threat issues, which in addition to all the ones that have existed, the types that Kelly has talked about and many, many others have talked about, there are probably two new ones on the table, one of which is, of course, tragically, the Mumbai-Nairobi-style attack where large numbers of heavily armed gunmen go into public places and carry out these mass slaughters. And secondly, probably not yet fully recognized by the public, but very much a problem, is the threat of cyber terrorism or cyber attacks. And we do a lot of work in the cyberspace, and every single day we're seeing reports from the government and from the commercial sector about cyber attacks taking place. And certainly there have been rogue groups out there that would like to use a cyber terrorist attack against American interests, either here or abroad. So these are big challenges and significant challenges. We can't let down our guard, but we, of course, have to do this properly.
Listeners, if you have anything you want to say or ask on terrorism as an issue in the mayoral race, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And this is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 NetCong and WNJO 90.3 Toms River, New York and New Jersey Public Radio. Bill de Blasio, who one might assume might be critical centrally of the Bloomberg administration on terrorism as he's been on Stop and Frisk, as what he has to say about the issue because of the surveillance of Muslim communities, which the Bloomberg administration denies. Here's public advocate de Blasio in a speech from March of 2012 praising Kelly and Bloomberg on anti-terror policy after 9/11.
Then incoming Mayor Michael Bloomberg of the NYPD took on this challenge head on. Commissioner Kelly led the NYPD's colossal shift into one of the largest counterterrorism forces in the world. Since the attacks on our city in 2001, the NYPD reports that 14 terror plots targeting New York City have been foiled. Now, this is a reminder of the threats we continue to face more than 10 years after 9/11, that these threats remain serious. It also informs us of the impressive job Commissioner Kelly has done in transforming the NYPD to confront these threats and his unwavering commitment to keep our city safe.
So it sounds, Richard Aborn, like de Blasio, who's criticized Kelly on a number of other policing issues like Stop and Frisk, is pretty satisfied with his efforts in this area. How would you characterize his position?
Well, I think you've just characterized it. I think de Blasio has been crystal clear, frankly, on both Stop and Frisk and on terrorism, that these are not efforts that are going to stop should he be elected mayor, that these are efforts that we very much have to employ. Stop and Frisk and our counterterrorism programs are critical to the safety of New Yorkers and perhaps more broadly, because New York is such a target for international terrorists. But he has said, and frankly, I think properly so, that these things have to be done in constitutionally sanctioned ways. The court in the Floyd decision specifically said she was not calling for an end to Stop and Frisk, but that it had to be done within the proper Fourth Amendment constraints. And I think you can say the exact same things about counterterrorism. We would be foolhardy to drop our counterterrorism efforts. We just need to make sure we do it in the right way.
And I think that de Blasio has said that at first blush, he doesn't think that the program under Bloomberg and Kelly is unconstitutional. Do you know if he's changed his talking points on that?
I have not heard him say that he thinks the program is unconstitutional. What I've been hearing him say, and I've heard Mr. Loeb say it as well, is that they intend to continue to employ these rather effective tools. In a way, the proof is in the pudding. Again, we've not been attacked, and that didn't just happen. We didn't just get lucky. It's the efforts of lots and lots of people, including and perhaps principally the NYPD, that have helped protect our city. And we are going, I think, under any new mayor and under any new police commissioner, continue those sorts of efforts.
Richard Aborn from the Citizens Crime Commission. As we assess the mayoral candidates and anti-terrorism efforts, part of Public Safety Week, here on 30 Issues in 30 Days, our election series on The Brian Lehrer Show, while others obsess on the horse race. As we know, before he was a candidate for mayor, before he was MTA chief, Joe Loda was deputy mayor for operations under Rudy Giuliani, the 9/11 mayor. But in the Republican debate, Loda was criticized by John Catsimatidis for his decisions around that time. Listen to this 19-second clip.
You take credit for 9/11, you also have to take care of the wrong items in 9/11. They had the ability to fix those phones from 1993 to the year 2000. And it took them 7 years to change the phone system. Wrong.
So is that a fair criticism? Do we know anything about Loda's role in the emergency phone system under Giuliani, for example?
I'm not sure, but I think John was referring to the radio system. I don't think there were...
Yes, and that's what I meant to say.
...cell phones at that point.
Right.
The radio system, I am not familiar with the absolute detail of that. I know it's been a big, big problem. I know the big problem back then was communications not only between the surface police, the NYPD, and the cops who were in the subways. There's been a big problem with that, but also in the subway itself, there was a problem with that. And then there was a problem with what's called interoperability, which is the ability of the different uniformed services, the emergency services, fire, police, ambulance, to communicate with one another. My understanding, and again, I don't know this in detail, is that the city has gone a long way in repairing a very complicated technology issue. What role Mr. Loda had in that, I really don't know.
And Katsimatidis went on to criticize why the emergency response office was located in the World Trade Center by Giuliani to begin with after the attack in 1993, made everybody know that it could be a target. Here's Loda's response.
You know, no one ever expected terrorists to actually take two airliners and drive them into buildings across the street. Look, I stand by everything I've ever done. I stand by the decisions I have always made. That's me. I stand by it.
And when I asked him a similar question on this program recently, he said it wasn't only the city of New York, but it was the federal government's own security agencies that also decided to locate in the World Trade Center. So nobody must have seen this coming.
Right.
So from your perspective, is it 20/20 hindsight? Because, you know, some people after that fact did say, what? Target number one? That's where you put the command center?
Listen, hindsight is always crystal clear, right? It's the easiest kind of vision we have. It is absolutely true that many federal agencies were in the same location. I don't know this exactly, but I think the notion was let's put these agencies close to one another so that they can be working together. Of course, no one anticipated a group like Al-Qaeda seizing, it was actually three airlines, and using them as bombs to take down these buildings. We have learned an enormous amount. Of course, it's well known that we have moved those systems now. They're not co-located. They are located in different parts of the city. So we have learned an enormous amount. I think the question is not so much what did we see then and what did we do then, but rather what did we learn from it and how are we adjusting and how have we adjusted our policies to accommodate those lessons. And I think throughout the city government, you see enormous changes that have taken place and throughout the federal government as well.
You know, Ray Kelly has famously bragged that his agency had surface-to-air capabilities, and we've seen the NYPD grow in size and capacity to rival, if not surpass, the FBI in taking the lead on anti-terrorism. Is that something you expect to continue under the next mayor, or especially if de Blasio is elected, to be seriously scrutinized and evaluated as to whether to continue it?
So whether or not there are surface-to-air missiles and surface-to-air capability in the NYPD, I'll leave that for others to discuss. But I do expect to see the NYPD remain a very vigorous player in the counterterrorism space. The NYPD needs to continue to do everything it possibly can to work in as cooperative, interlocking fashion as it can with the FBI. It shouldn't be rivalry. It should be a partnership. And that's true of the other federal agencies that are charged with protecting the country. I think the NYPD has an enormous role to play. We have terrific cops here who understand the streets, who are very good at picking up information. That's an enormous asset that the federal authorities don't have. And when you can use federal capability plus that street capability, you begin to build very good protective systems. Absolutely, I think that should continue. But again, I will say it again with the same caveat. We just need to make sure we do it properly.
Let's take a phone call. Richard in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Good night, Brian.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Regarding the terrorism, I think the NYPD is doing a good job so far. And in terms of surveillance, listening to phone call, the ones that are not important, then they, you know, delete. But regarding the terrorism, as you say, they are not targeted by one set of people. Terror come in many different pieces now, so you got to be vigilant, and you can't sit down your guard at no point, because when we start look overseas, they're in our backyard. They're at the airport, so you have to be vigilant and keep it up, because it's all around.
Richard, thank you very much. Richard Aborn from the Citizens Crime Commission, circling back to de Blasio's position on surveillance as we begin to wrap this up. On this show, he said that the latest revelations about NYPD surveillance were more disturbing than the original ones. He said, we've not been leveled with the NYPD, that in fact the kind of surveillance happening is much broader and not based on specific leads. And I have spoken out clearly, he said, and said we need to do a full review of all surveillance efforts, and anything that is not based on specific leads should not continue. So Bill de Blasio on the show recently. And now we see that the NYPD is in court right now arguing in defense of their tactics. So as more information comes out, we'll hear both mayoral candidates' positions on that and see what a court decides. Do you think that's the standard with your experience in law and law enforcement? Do you think that's the standard for anti-terrorism surveillance? There have to be specific leads about specific individuals in order to initiate something?
I think there is going to have to be – this is precisely the policy discussion that I was speaking about at the top of your show, which is we're going to have to decide what threshold of information we expect the NYPD or the FBI, for that matter, to have before it launches an investigation into what we might call sensitive sites, houses of worship, et cetera. And de Blasio was saying that the department has to have a specific lead. Of course, what that means has to be fleshed out. And there is, in fact, a court agreement in place, the Handschuh Agreement, which goes back, I think, 25 years now, which does not only offer some guidance around this, but also provides for court involvement should there be a question about what the department is doing. I should also add what will be new in January is the law instituting the inspector general on the NYPD for the first time. The department's never had an inspector general before, even though it's very normal in the other federal agencies that work with the FBI, excuse me, with the NYPD. And I think the inspector general's office will also have a role in reviewing whether or not the surveillance activity being conducted by the department falls within the proper guidelines that are articulated for the department. So this needs to be a robust debate. We need to understand exactly the conditions under which we want to offer guidelines to the department in order to carry out these investigations. And I say guidelines, Brian, because in this area of the law, this sort of Fourth Amendment area of the law, it's very difficult to put down bright lines. It's very difficult to say under this condition you can and under that condition you can't. You have to offer broad policy guidelines, which is what the case law says. And again, going back to the Floyd case, the court talks about Terry versus Ohio, which says that an officer has to have reasonable suspicion before that officer conducts a stop. It's a similar kind of thinking in the counterterrorism space.
So last thing, and another difference between the candidates, de Blasio supported the idea of an inspector general for the NYPD that now passed the city council, and they overrode Mayor Bloomberg's veto. The IG proposal came up around questions of stop and frisk, and Loda opposed it. But would an inspector general also have a role in things like monitoring how the NYPD does counterterrorism?
Yes. And the inspector general is going to happen. Not only did the city council override the mayor's veto, but I believe, at least as of now, the city has not brought a legal challenge to the bill, to the inspector general bill. So absent a legal challenge, this will become law.
And so with what impact or what upside impact or downside impact, if you see one, on counterterrorism efforts?
I don't think there's any downside impact at all. There are lots of inspector generals throughout the United States in lots of police forces, and none of those police forces have been impeded in their ability to fight crime or terror. But it is a bit of oversight, and policing is a paramilitary organization, so oversight is completely proper. I think it acts as an early warning system for both the department and for the council, city council, and for the mayor, so that we can avert large-scale problems. It's much better if you can discuss these sorts of issues early on as they begin to become issues rather than waiting for them to become a crisis. So I think it's a win for the city.
Richard Aborn, president of the public safety think tank, the Citizens Crime Commission, thank you so much for coming on with us.
My pleasure, Brian.
And that's issue 8 in our 30 Issues in 30 Days election series. Public Safety Week continues tomorrow when we meet the apparent incoming Brooklyn DA after defeating Joe Hines in the Democratic primary, Ken Thompson. That's on tomorrow's show. Coming up next, we have Malcolm Gladwell to talk about his new book, David and Goliath, Underdogs, Misfits, and the Art of Battling Giants. And he'll take your calls. It'll be Ask Malcolm Gladwell, and we'll talk about his book. Stay with us.